time, we would like to ask if there are any members of the media present. Okay, we ask this so that we can continue to keep the meeting safe for those attending and help protect anonymity. Welcome to the, see if I get it right this time, letting go of relationships versus running away meeting. My name is Wayne, and I will be co-leading this meeting with Louie. After a moment of silence, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Okay, now we read 12 steps in 12 traditions. Everyone read one or two or fewer, whatever seems right.
We admitted we were powerless over sex and love addiction and our lives have become unmanageable.
Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Made decisions for our will and our lives, or did care of God as we understood God, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. When time is ready, with God, remove all these defects of character.
7. Humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to the world. 9. Made direct amends to such people who have, wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with a power greater than ourselves, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to sex and love addicts and to practice these principles in all areas of our lives.
Thank you. 12 Traditions of Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on SLA 8 unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as this power may be expressed through our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
3. The only requirement for SLA membership is a desire to stop acting out a pattern of sex and love addiction. Any two or more persons gathered together for mutual aid in recovering from sex and love addiction may call themselves an SLA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or SLA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the sex and love addict who still suffers.
6. But never endorse clients or lend the SLA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Least problem, money, prestige, or these problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every SLA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions.
8. SLA should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. SLA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve.
10. SLA has no opinion on outside issues, hence the SLA name ought never be drawn to public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, film, and other public media. We need guard with special care of the anonymity of all SLA members.
And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personnel.
Thank you. Okay, because of the sensitive and personal nature of this meeting, if you are new, we suggest you speak to someone after the meeting, read some of the literature of the program, and try to attend at least 5 other SLAA meetings. In addition, we do not crosstalk nor offer advice to other members in the group. People will be called on by show of hands and are free to speak without interruption or comment from other members. Our purpose in suggesting this is to make the program widely available to all who need it. Would someone be willing to be our timekeeper for this meeting? Scott, thank you. Okay, now the two speakers each have 7 to 10 minutes on the topic. Would you like to speak first or me? Okay. I'm Wayne. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Wayne.
Inability to let go of relationships comfortably is one of the things that troubled me most before coming to SLAA. The need to get away from such relationships, of course, was one of the things that troubled me more, but how to handle separation, I would just basically. I remember a case where I simply had to bolt in order to stay alive and basically fell into severe depression and thinking that nobody would really understand. I did actually talk with someone whose advice demonstrated that he did not understand. And very, very lonely, frustrating process. There continues to remain the possibility of having to bolt from a relationship if nothing else works. I've been in SLAA for 5 years. Fortunately, I'm becoming more aware and more sensitive to my feelings and what's going on, and see danger signals before I'm toppling off the edge of the cliff and learn to make adjustments. And that's a big, big help. I think I can speak more of letting go, because I think one of the things I guess when I look at the topic and think about it, I have some satisfaction about learning to let go of relationships in the present time frame. Recently, one of my friends who I met in SLAA, who for a while was thinking of getting an apartment with me, we spent a lot of time together. We didn't end up living in the same place, but anyway, this friend killed himself after we had been acquainted a year and a half or so. And that, even though I could see it coming, he was always depressed. In some ways, I was amazed he lasted as long as he did, but of course it was an unprecedented shock just the same. Never dealt with anything like that before. But before long, one of the emerging things in my mind was the satisfaction that I didn't have to say I never said bye to him. Actually, I always wrapped up whatever we did with a sense of satisfaction. And I, last time I saw him, you know, I didn't know I was saying bye for the last time. But I always let go. I had the satisfaction that in the year and a half, this troubled person and this sometimes difficult friendship, I had never used force or threatened to use force. I'd never controlled, I'd never manipulated. I had just complete satisfaction how I had dealt with things. And when the time came when I realized I would never see this person again, there were, you know, occasional shocks of, oh yeah, I can't do that, he's not around, or no, that person I see just reminds me of him, that's not him, he's gone, sort of things. I mean, those come up, of course. But I knew that I had kept myself separate. I had not invaded and intruded and woven myself into someone else's space in a way that meant that I was internally torn apart by someone else's issues. Another situation that persists is there's somebody who was one of that person's friends who started becoming a friend of mine a couple of months before that, and we've spent a lot more time together lately. someone just commiserating about our friend who left and what that all meant. But, you know, here's another somewhat troubled person, the kind that in addiction I would have just, if I had met someone like that a few years ago, I'd be in very shaky condition if I was able to still be around myself. But again, detached. I realize, you know, if we get together and I like what's going on, that's nice. I enjoy it. I don't take possession of the situation. If I don't like what's going on, sometimes things don't go well, you know, well, that's okay. That's outside of me. I can let that go. If our friendship blows up, I have my support. I won't be devastated. And so, in a sense, I let go, even though I thank God for that relationship every day, I let go of it continually. I don't grasp and hold on to possession of it. It's likely for me that I'm more in danger of an addictive relationship at this stage of my recovery with an institution than with a person. And I have been in addictive relationships with institutions before. I think of, you know, there's some things that are going on in the religious society where I participate that I sometimes find deeply upsetting. That brings up real rage. That brings up, you know, tremendous sense of, you know, what is going to be done, because I don't want to leave and sometimes I don't want to stay, and there's this contradiction. That's therefore an area where I see I need to grow, and I don't know all the answers. I don't know how to handle it. I do have SLAA. I do have the support and experience of others, and I want to hear today about how others handle detachment in situations where we don't see, I mean, where it's hard to just imagine how what life would be like if we really get out of the way, or where getting out of the way is highly inappropriate, but there are real problems that have to be dealt with that we don't know how to deal with. So, you know, I have some satisfaction in part of this area. I see areas for growth in another part, and I'm sure I'll learn something today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Hi, Louie, I need to be here.
Hi, Louie.
Hi, Louie.
I'd like to talk about letting go, first of all. And I had a pattern, and I can still fall into this, and I sort of need to remind myself that this disease has never been cut and dry for me. It's constant vigilance, and it all depends on where I'm sitting in terms of you know, how needy I am at one moment to another, or you know, one day to another. Where I'm more susceptible to getting into things, situations that aren't healthy for me. And I've found that over the course of time that I can still see someone that's not healthy for me, but I get out of them quicker. That's what I've found over time. I remember I used to get into, you know, I'd be in an unhealthy relationship. And what that is for me, what the characteristics for me are when I'm telling myself I shouldn't be in this and I shouldn't be with this person and I shouldn't do this or that, and then I go and do it. And the same happens with, and when it's especially deadly for me is when someone else is doing the same thing. They're telling me, I mean, we could be sitting there talking, saying the words, we shouldn't do this, and then we do it, you know, and it just tears me up emotionally, and I kind of isolated what I had been doing more than just, you know, the physical person, what was underneath that whole thing for me, and what it was I was, and I, you know, I say was, and I still can fall into this, but if I'm upset inside. If I'm needy, whereas if I perceive a need going unmet or my instincts are threatened, I get attracted to weakness in others, and I tend to
want to take advantage of that. And I think it maybe, you know, even going further back, it goes back to when I was a kid. I felt like, or I've kind of isolated what happened as a kid. I don't have it totally, and I don't know if it's that the memories won't come up or they're not there. I don't know, but what I've gotten it to is that I was covertly incested by my mother, where I was exposed to in excessive and or inappropriate nudity. And what that did for me is it brought up feelings in me that I didn't know what to deal with. But more important than that is that I believe that what my mother was doing was she was taking advantage of me, because I couldn't defend against that as a kid. She was abusing me, through a lack of boundaries. And I remember I got to the point where I would actually shut the door. She would get out of the tub, and I would see her breasts, and it would feel something. It turned into shame, because I had these feelings. I didn't know what they were, and then eventually all I felt was like shame when I saw her, and I would shut the door. So I was like trying to create a boundary for her. So as much as I can be abused or taken advantage of, I can do the same. And I found that this disease flip-flops for me. I can give someone the power, and then they can give me the power, power differential that I refer to in this. I guess the key for me today is seeing that it's happening, when it happens, and getting out of it quicker today. Whereas if it started where I would be in something for months, then a couple of years down the road it was weeks, and then a few days, now I can meet someone and have a conversation, and I can see that this just wouldn't work for me, I see that what is my motives? If I want to take advantage of someone, that I have no business being with them. This is not an even relationship. I've already created a power differential where I put them below me, in my head. But I've created this thing where I put them below me, and I'm just gonna take, and I'm gonna be in something that I shouldn't be in. The other thing, running away, I struggle a lot more with that one still today. What I mean by that is that I still have the tendency to run away, and I. Sometimes I wonder if I'm ever gonna come out of this. because to me, what it is today for me is it tends to be an ingrained behavior for me in terms of running away, and what I find is that I've had a pattern of getting involved with people who are not available. Now, whether they're involved with something else, actually, most of the time, they're not involved with someone else, but they're not emotionally available. And I believe that that I do that because it's safe, because I don't need to take a risk, and because I don't have to commit. I don't have to deal with one of my core beliefs, dysfunctional beliefs, and I don't want to give it any power through even saying it. But I'll just say it, that I have this core belief that if I don't find the right one, I'm going to grow up to be all alone, nobody. But then when I'm with someone, and when I'm with someone available, which is the flip side of this, then I have this fear that I'm trapped in this relationship and I won't be available for the right one, which is, again, dysfunctional. And what I've been trying to do lately with this is I'm trying to date people that are like totally different from anybody that I've ever dated. And I guess a prime example is the woman that I've been seeing lately. She's like totally different than anyone I've ever dated, and she's very sweet and considerate and conscientious, and I've tended to date people which I believe have the characters more like what my mother was like, and they may be my mother was an alcoholic, so maybe that can sum everything up, but she was manipulative and controlling, and she was both obnoxious, like a drunk would be, and maybe it's not that blatant with people that I see, but I do tend to gravitate, or I have gravitated towards controlling women that that I give my power away to, and then I get trapped in the relationship, and I feel like my tendency has been that I feel like I can't break up with the person, and somehow I'll do something to sabotage a relationship to force them to break up with me. So that's something that's ongoing for me. And one other thing with that is that I find it real interesting why I tend to gravitate towards people that I do. And I don't know, I guess I'd just leave it at that it's just nice lately that I have been gravitated towards people that are, towards my gender preference as women, that are different, and maybe it's because I'm allowing, for that change. Because I find that with addictive patterns is if I keep doing the same thing, I'll keep getting the same results. And I guess that relates to people as well. If I go for the same person, I'll get the same results. I can't change my relationship with mother. She's dead, and I feel like I've been trying to do that in being with these women that have the characteristics of her. So I guess it's just one day at a time. Thanks.
Okay, now we open the meeting for discussion on the topic, which is letting go of relationships versus running away. There is a 3-minute time limit per person. Please acknowledge the timekeeper when you're signaled that your time is up. Thank you. You circulate the microphone, it may help get a better recording. Yes.
Hi, I'm Judy, a recovering sex and love addict. This is the exact reason why I came up here to this conference, because I haven't let go of this pattern yet. And I walked out on, I don't know what I'm doing with that situation, but I walked away from something a month ago, and since then it's been another inventory, or I should say a more extensive inventory that began last September when I went to punch somebody's lights out. And I hadn't been prone to do that since I was 16 and put my fist down. I was a very violent teenage alcoholic. And when this happened in September, it was like a wake-up call to me. It was as if I had drank. And I started this 4-step that's been working, an ongoing piece of work since then, where I do extensive work, and then it's 5th, 6th, 7th step time, and amends time. So where it leads me now is this inventory of a history of my unavailableness in any relationship I've ever been in, and how I walk away from ones that could be healthier or whatever. I don't even, I'm very gray right now with this. But I've hung on to the unhealthy. I've hung on to the unhealthy. And granted, it's been a process of my getting healthy. I was a very unwell person. And my fear, what I say I want, which is a healthy, committed relationship, I don't know what that looks like. I really haven't a clue what that really looks like. It's a very confusing thing for me. But I'm a runner. I go. I'm out of here. Bye. And I have lots of nasty little ways of doing it. And this one called me on my stuff. He's not going to let me get away with it. And I haven't had that with anybody. He called me on it. I started my little dance after I walked out that day, and you know, whatever amount of days later we spoke on the phone. Of course, it took for him to call me. And and he called me on my stuff. Well, I know what I said, well, I don't know what I want. Well, I know what I want. You better figure it out and want you to do the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Well, and, you know, of course, smarty little me. I said, what makes you think I'm not doing that? And the fear of I don't know what healthy is. As I move along in my path and I bump along, then I get to a new level with me, and then that means a new level of relating and all that wonderful stuff. And that's where I'm at. I'm in a very gray area right now. And it's very scary to me. It's heart palpitations, time anxiety attacks, and time is up. And so that's, this topic is very relevant to me.
Hi, my name is Lynn. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Lynn.
I also have a pattern of running away. That's been my pattern, and I've done a lot of work in therapy, and know that it's because my biological father died when I was 5 years old. So I have a fear of abandonment, and I want to be the one to leave. And because of my self-esteem issues and everything else, I think that I'm worth less, so that you're going to leave me anyway, so I might as well be the one to walk out the door. I changed that pattern before I got into this program with my present husband, because I realized that I wanted to be able to be intimate and to love him. I didn't know that I had to love myself first, but I made a commitment to myself that I was not going to be the one to leave. And then when I got into this program and learned about these tools and that I needed to do work on myself, I've stuck with that commitment, as difficult as it is. And I can't say that I still don't want to bolt, but I've made that commitment to myself and to my sponsor, and I'm not doing that, although it's become more difficult. The other thing that I've discovered is, as much as I want to have a relationship with this man, I'm deathly afraid of intimacy, which is another reason why I bolt, because it's a two-sided coin of the fear of abandonment. I don't want you to abandon me. I do want intimacy, but don't get too close, because if you're getting too close, then that's scary too, because I'll be engulfed, which is basically, I guess, what love addiction is, which is the fear of abandonment and the fear of engulfment. So so that's what I do in my main relationship with my husband. But I'm realizing is I do this with everyone. I don't have many friends, and the reason I don't have many friends is because I don't allow people to get close to me, because I don't want them to hurt me. And because of my disease and thinking that I'm terminally unique and blah blah blah, I just build up all these walls and don't let people get in. And the few that do, I end up running away. So the commitment that I made this year to myself and to my sponsor was to develop relationships with women. And there are not a lot of women in SLAA in Miami, so I've looked to other fellowships, to AA, and gone to women's meetings and said right out in the meeting that this is why I'm here. And am trying to do that. It's very painful. And I'm realizing that there's a lot more work that I need to do on myself. I have been able, I have been able to let go of relationships with my family, and that's been healthy because they've been unhealthy in my recovery journey. But thank you.
Hi, I'm Kathy. I'm a sex and love and codependent addict.
Hi,
Kathy.
This is a really good topic for me to look at because I spend my life doing two things. The first is enjoying the pursuit of a relationship, and the second is trying to get out of it once I get that relationship. I think that I'm in so far what's the healthiest relationship that I've ever had, inclusive of friendships, romances, family ties. My partner now, I've been with for 3 years. We've been married for a little more than a year, and he's also in recovery, and we do a lot of recovery work together, and we are vigorously honest with each other. And as painful as that is, so far it's been the only way to be able to stay real and be in a relationship at the same time. In the pursuit of relationships, I can metamorphosize into whatever woman this particular person needs me to be. I even get taller, I swear. I think that that whatever it takes, if there's somebody that I cue in on, I become what they need. And they don't even know that they need it, and yet it's there. That's my codependency, and it's scary. And with that, I lose identity entirely. So I become this person that they need. I sort of score, get that relationship, and then I have all this sort of ego thing, and I'm in control, and I'm on top. Only I'm also very, very resentful of this person because now I can't be myself. Now I have to maintain that person that got in the relationship with them. And so then I lose myself, and the insanity comes, and half of me is trying to please them, and the other half of me is trying to get back to who I really am and see bit by bit, are they going to accept who I really am? And, well, no, they couldn't possibly accept who I really am, so I have to keep this act up. And the jealousy begins because my self-esteem crashes. So then I'm jealous, and nobody wants to live with that. I don't want to live with that. And so that's when I begin the running away. I cannot stay with someone who doesn't respect me, and I cannot stay with me if I don't respect me. So I have to start leaving the relationship as soon as the high wears off. And my way of doing that is to have expectations that are so high that nobody could possibly live up to them. And my husband is willing to point that out when I'm being that way, and I am willing to look at it when it's pointed out. So that has worked for us. I think that my pattern thus far has stopped. Thank you. Although I do feel it's there. I feel it. When he rejects me, my scanners go on. How can I deal with rejection? Well, by thinking about someone else. If I think about how great someone else thinks that I am, then I don't feel so rejected by him, because there's already that other that other goal. And I've been very lucky to be able to not act on that by being honest about it. And it takes the wind out of my sails, because when you're honest, you gotta get humble and you gotta get on your knees and you gotta say, I'm sick, this is what I'm doing, can you forgive me? God, can you forgive me, partner? Can you forgive me, self? And then you can't do it anymore. So that's where I'm at with this issue. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Scott. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hi, Scott.
Wow, this is a tough one for me. Letting go of relationships versus running away. It's like the reason I got into program was I really had to bolt from a real unhealthy obsessional relationship with someone where I was very much in danger of hurting myself or another person through another addiction, chemical and drug addiction, and so I came in here and now that I had to run away from that relationship, in one sense, that I mean I had to survive, and you know, it's been a difficult process, especially in the first few months when, you know, all I wanted to do was to call him. That was like, it was just like a daily struggle at first to not call him. And now I'm kind of in the grieving process of letting go of that relationship and realizing, you know, looking back a little bit, having a little bit of time, that it wasn't the relationship that I had, that I thought it was. It was a lot of fantasy and it was a lot of unreality and my, imagination was rampant in that relationship. And just hearing what some people have shared tonight, you know, now I'm realizing that this is a pattern and that I have had the pattern of kind of molding myself into what the obsession of the year would want me to be. And whatever that would require, if that would require me to get stoned every day or do whatever to fit in with their idea of who I am. And it's like just this period of time I've had now, since I've been in program in November, it's like this is the first time I'm actually learning to be myself and to try things out and to know what is what Scott likes and what Scott are his needs and his interests. And I guess I just want to wrap it up. I'm just so grateful to the program that God has put me here, and that I can continue to learn about my patterns and just kind of absorb it all in and, you know, continue to make sense of it on a one day at a time basis. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Wayne Sexton, Love Addict. One thing I liked about the group where I learned my early recovery was it was small enough that people had time to share it twice, and I always had much more insight second time around. I'm seeing that the view I presented and primarily really worked on about relationships of this ilk has been rather shallow and contained. Perhaps the reason that I'm having more trouble with the relationship that I mentioned with the institution is that that relationship is actually deeper and much more significant, and not because it's addictive. And, you know, I see challenges for me in building, you know, progressively better quality relationships. There was a time when running away was the only way to end a relationship, because if there was no substance, there was no way of letting go. I mean, let go of what? You just move on. And that's not the kind of people I'm connecting with today. I have different venues. I'm meeting a different caliber of person in terms of what can be provided in continuity. And therefore, running away or letting go actually become different things. And I've let go of so much. I've lost an awful lot through this addiction, and had to let a lot of things go besides the few cases that I've run away from. But I wanted to, you know, just go on building, you know, deeper relationships of such a quality that, with continual awareness of the things that rock the boat, that those things get dealt with so that I don't have to run away. And if there's a termination, the termination actually has a process about it. And I actually have processed some departures or some pulling back froms. And that's a relatively new experience. When I left the religious society I grew up in, I did not bolt. And I couldn't emotionally let it go immediately, but I actually had a process of dealing with that and made sure that things were on as good terms as I could make them be. And I can't, thanks, immediately think of a personal relationship that it worked quite the same way. Yes, I can come to think of it. But, you know, where I actually have some sort of closure on things and let them go in my mind and perhaps formalize that, perhaps not. Thanks. Is everyone satisfied that we've had our meeting? Should we close now? Okay, we have agreed to close discussion. If you did not get a chance to share, please talk with someone after the meeting. If you're available after the meeting to speak with others, please raise your hand. Okay, we acknowledge and thank our timekeeper, Scott. Thank you. In closing, we would like to remind you that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you like and leave the rest. Also, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our program. If we are to recover, we must feel free to say what is in our minds and hearts. Therefore, whom you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Let's close with a serenity prayer. Hand-holding is optional.
Come back, it works, if you work it, recovery is awesome, dude.